Every Woman is a feminist show about women making a difference and the men by their side. We have also discovered that girls can make a difference too, and so we want to add that going forward. Women and girls making a difference and the males by their side, young or old. And as 52-53% of the eligible U.S. voters and 50% of the world population, women are not a special interest group, and every woman should work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in the social, political, and economic arenas. The views and opinions expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of the KKFI or Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated staff, volunteers, board, or sponsors. Good afternoon. This is Sharon Lockhart in the studio with Amy Bell and Ebony Johnson. And we have a male on the board in training today named John Davidson, who's going to be assisting us. And our guest in the studio today is Monique Gabrielle Salazar, who has an interesting bio and story, which we will get into later. And right now, I think somebody has some news for us. Who's going to do that news? Amy's going to do the news.
Single women cannot afford to rent a small apartment in nearly all of the biggest U.S. cities, but single men could manage to lease in a third of those locations, a reflection of the gender wage gap research shows. The Midwestern cities of Wichita, Kansas, and Tulsa, Oklahoma are the only two of the 50 largest cities where the median income of single women can pay for a studio or one-bedroom apartment, according to research by RentCafe.com, an online apartment search company. Reuters reported February 18th. An online commercial released by Nike this week showed Arab women fencing, boxing, and spinning on ice skates has stirred controversy over its attempt to smash stereotypes about women leading homebound lives in the conservative region. It begins with a woman nervously peering out of her doorway and adjusting her veil before going for a run in the street, while a female voice narrates in a Saudi dialect. "What will they say about you? Maybe they'll say you exceeded all expectations." Within 48 hours, the video was shared 75,000 times on Twitter and viewed almost 400,000 times on YouTube. An ad which touches on the insecurities of women in a society digs deeper and becomes an empowerment tool rather than just a product. Sarah Al-Zakari, a spokeswoman for the International Red Cross in Iraq, wrote on her Twitter page. But not all of the reviews were positive. "I think this ad was an utter fail," said Nada Sahimi on the company's Instagram page. "This is not the true representation of Arab Muslim women. We do not wear a hijab and go running in the streets. Shame on Nike," she said. In Saudi Arabia, physical education is prohibited in all girls' public schools, and women's gyms remain illegal in the kingdom because female athleticism is deemed un-Islamic, Reuters reported February 23rd. The Kemper Museum is accepting applications for its Women to Watch series. Women within the first 10 years of their career who incorporate metal within their artwork and live within 60 miles of Kansas City can apply. The deadline is March 15th. For more information, visit kemperart.org. Black Women in History Highlight. Born in 1903 in Norfolk, Virginia, Ella Baker became involved in political activism in the 1930s. She organized the Young Negroes Cooperative League in New York City and later became a national director for the NAACP. In 1957, Baker joined the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, whose first president was Martin Luther King, Jr. She also worked with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee to support civil rights and activism on college campuses. Baker died in New York City in 1986.
Thank you, Amy. Ebony, do you want to introduce Monique?
We'll read the bio here. Monique Gabrielle Salazar is an activist, writer, and small business owner in Kansas City, Missouri. She owns the vintage clothing shop, The Scullery Maid, at 5532 Troost, and curates her collection from pieces she collects all over the world. Her first book of poetry, If You Can See My Ghost Like I Do, was published July 2016 by Spartan Press. And her next book, Striking the Black Snake, Poems from Standing Rock, will be released in March by 39th Street Press. Salazar can be seen in the upcoming HBO documentary, Abortion, Stories Women Tell, premiering on April 3rd. Salazar also runs the quarterly show, Cinema Cabalist, which showcases forgotten silent films and premiered Daughter of the Don last year. An active novice sister of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, City of Fountains Mission House, Salazar seeks to promote safe sex and HIV/AIDS awareness, as well as promoting joy and self-love. She is on the Every Woman Show today to talk about participation in Standing Rock. In November and January, she stood with the water protectors at the mouth of the Mean Jose, the Missouri River in North Dakota.
Thank you, Ebony. Thanks, Monique, for being here. And now I think Ebony's going off to complete another task. So, Monique, who knew? I know you've done so much, and you look so young to me.
Well, thank you so much. I don't feel so young anymore. My back definitely says something different, but I think, you know, that's just a life well lived so far.
So you've been to Standing Rock a couple of times. As I told you, Hanson Lee was our guest last week, and you said you'd heard of him, Buddhist Tinkers, from Standing Rock.
I absolutely had. I had some mutual friends that were up there, and one of them is an active Mary prankster also. So we were all sitting around chatting, and they brought them up. So it was weird to hear you say that, because I was like, oh, that I definitely heard that in North Dakota.
Such a small world. It's unbelievable. Well, are you familiar with what recently is happening at Standing Rock?
Yes. What has happened is they have enforced the February 22nd eviction date. There was a group of about 40 people, including Grandma Regina Brave, who was one of the warriors during Wounded Knee in 1973. She decided to make a treaty stand and to stand on her land for as long as possible. So a group of veterans stayed behind to protect her as well. And they eventually ended up arresting her and removing her from the camp. So that was on February 23rd, and I believe she was the absolute last person to actually be in Ochete Oyate.
Did they flood the land, or?
No, the flooding is a natural phenomenon that occurs in that area, and it's actually curious that in 1997, the last time that the area flooded so much, the Army Corps of Engineers used that as an excuse to seize land that previously belonged to the tribe and was part of the reservation, and also land that belonged to LaDonna Allard, who is the landowner over at Sacred Stone Camp. So that was in 97, and that was all the land that we were basically camping on, where the Ochete Chacoin and Ochete Oyate camps were.
And that was land that has been claimed by the Corps of Engineers.
Absolutely. That's the land that is under dispute because of the treaties of the 1851 Laramie Treaty. It should be native land. It is native land, and it should be returned. So it's the record snowfall this year was the concern over the flooding in the camp area. If you look at maps from 1997, you'll see the area where camp is actually labeled Lake Oahe. So there was a scientist that came in from the east who goes by the name of Boots, who came to warn the tribe that was like, we really need to think about this because it's a serious concern. So as far as
I'm really glad that they're really concerned for the safety of the water protesters. It seems like they've been so concerned about that previously, too.
It's interesting how their concern is very subjective to what benefits corporate profit and has for as long as they've been on this land.
Sometimes I can't tell when Amy's jazzing me and jiving with me. But
what?
Anyway.
The government was really concerned that people might get hurt at Standing Rock. That's why they shot them with water cannons and stuff.
And rubber bullets.
And
attacked them with dogs.
Grenades.
And sprayed them with pesticides.
Oh, I tell you. She
I'm
does
very
this
dry
to
and sarcastic, so oh, I completely
you got
get
it immediately, and I'm sitting here like, where is she coming from?
Safety first.
Yeah.
Absolutely, safety first.
America. Safety second. America first. Safety second.
Yeah.
Okay,
good,
sorry,
good.
I'm done.
Well, you know, and Hanson Lee last week, well, when I was talking with him earlier, he shared with me that they were bringing dump trucks in and dumping trash and then taking pictures as though
yes.
this were the campers that did this.
Yes, that's absolutely on a Facebook Live video. You can watch that. They were dumping humongous, I mean, we're talking a semi full of trash. We're not just talking like a regular dump truck that you see on the street. We're talking a 40,000, you know, pound capacity dump truck that is creating a huge pile at camp, and then you have someone who's been identified as a Morton County employee taking photos of it in a way that it makes it look that that's how all of camp looks. And I'll tell you, when I was there, it's absolutely not what's going on. And the lengths that Morton County has gone to, I have never seen anything like it in my lifetime. I've done political activism all over the world, and this is the most confounding movement. And when I say movement, I mean movement by the police and the Army Corps and the government against Native people and our land. The land that they gave us, by the way, back from the millions of acres that they stole and forced us to sell. And these are their treaties. These are their laws. The Article 6 of the Constitution says that the treaties are absolutely the law of the land. And that's what's being completely disregarded here.
So, I don't know if you maybe listeners follow this on Facebook. There are some pages. I can't remember which one I'm following now, but every now and then I'll get a live feed from Standing Rock, and it's really terrifying, and I don't know if I'm watching out of kind of like some sort of morbid curiosity, but at the same time, every time I turn on one of those videos, I know that I could witness something really terrible happening live, because terrible things were happening constantly. But it really felt like, okay, well, no, you need to witness this. You need more people need to be watching this. More people need to be witnessing. And fortunately, I did not actually witness any live extreme violence. Most of the time it was during the day. But it was a very well-documented movement that they had people broadcasting through Facebook Live, and I thought that was it's very convenient that modern technology can do that for us, and it was also, I felt, very smart because of exactly what happened was that they tried to make the image appear that the environmental activists were actually destroying the land.
No, the thing that that bothers me about, well, first of all, I want to give a good shout out to social media, because without social media, this movement would not have made it past North or South Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very grateful for that being an option now in our ways to communicate and to work together as communities across the world. There were over 200 nations that went to camp. But at the same time, and you say, you know, witnessing terrible things, and yet terrible things were happening at camp all the time.
Yes.
I was warned not to go by myself to the edge of camp because I could be snatched by the police. I participated in a direct action where we held ground on Turtle Island, and while that didn't end in any violence or arrests, the tension in the air is beyond palpable. It's, I think, the closest, and I mean no disrespect to anyone saying this, I think it's the closest to a battle that I will ever get to. And not certainly a battle on our side, but the way they were dressed in riot gear and, you know, soldiers' uniforms, certainly a battle on their side with snipers and a, you know, missile launcher next to the drill pad. And I also find it very ironic that they are so eager to call us, you know, litterers and trash bugs and eco-terrorists when they are spraying poison on us as we are at camp, and usually in response to direct actions taken by water protectors. And these poisons can cause everything from liver damage to cancer to we don't know what, because they've never been tested on humans. They also somehow got a hold of 40,000 pounds of Rosol, which is a rat poison, to kill off a few thousand prairie dogs. I don't know why anyone would need 40,000 pounds of Rosol to kill a few prairie dogs. It's ended up killing all the buffalo. The Tatanka are dying.
I mean, that's a good indication that they don't understand how ecosystems work.
It's a good indication that they're eco-terrorists.
I'm sitting here, wait a minute. They killed how many prairie dogs?
It was supposed to be, the prairie dogs are a problem for ranchers and landowners because they obviously burrow into the ground, and when the ranchers are riding their horses over that or steering their cattle over that, you know, unfortunately,
break a leg.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you really can't do anything besides put the animal out of its misery at that point.
But a side effect was, you said, buffalo?
The buffalo have started to die. The Tatanka are dying in large numbers. The deer are dying in large numbers. The coyotes, you can barely hear them at night anymore. It's spread all throughout the area. And I'm sure in the water now. And while I was there, I attended an unofficial UN hearing, and a lady had her hair tested, and I have the list of chemicals that she was found positive for here with me. And another thing that they're finding is uranium, and people are starting to get glass lung disease. Uranium. This is a complete... I know. This is the country that we're living in right now, and we always said, what are we going to do if the Holocaust ever happens again? It's happening right now in North Dakota as we're speaking. This is the violent taking of land from a Native people that has always owned this land, that will always own that land, no matter what law or government says that they do not. This is a movement that is killing people. Either we will die from cancer in the future, or whatever these happen to cause us. People have been blinded by this action, by, you know, the rubber bullets being shot in the face. I met two people that were shot in the eye on Monday, Martin Luther King Day.
Did the young woman lose her arm, or were they able to save it?
No, they were able to save it.
It was still bad.
It's very bad. She's still continually going through surgeries to try and regain any sort of...
What happened to her arm?
She was hit by a combustion grenade on November 20th while on the bridge. Her name's Sophia Wolanski. She's, I believe, from New York. She's 21. And what the police are doing is they're pulling the pins out from the combustion grenades and then waiting for a couple seconds until, you know, it's about to explode, and then they throw them at people's heads. And this one hit her in the arm and exposed bone and tendons, and they had to do a skin graft that was extremely large. She was in the hospital for a very long time.
It looked like she was going to lose her arm.
She was very close to losing her arm.
It looked like there was not enough there to salvage.
There almost was not.
At the high point, how many people would you say were in camp there?
I believe there were two high points at camp. The first one was when I was there the first time, and they did a count of the women and children at camp. There were 6,000 women and children alone at camp. So, you know, add that to there were definitely more men at camp than women. I'd say there were 14,000 people at camp. When the veterans went, there was probably just around that number, if not more. So all in all, I'd say probably 30,000 to 40,000 people have actually physically been to camp, counting journalists and other people.
You know what gets me is this is strangely really the biggest corporate interest versus the people's interest. And we do have the Native tribes that have really made it their fight. But when I see people supporting them, I see conservative, liberal, middle of the road. I mean, I know some people who are pretty radically, Trump supporters, who are also Standing Rock supporters. I mean, this is not a traditionally Democrat, Republican type of thing. And yet, here we're still losing it. The whole country has still lost this, and I'm really dumbfounded because I've never seen so much consensus on an issue among my very diverse group of friends who have very strong views on very different directions.
Well, I found this meme. One of my friends had it as her cover photo, and it says, you know, you still protesting that pipeline? And it says, me. You still drinking water?
Exactly. Exactly. And especially in Kansas City.
That the is our water. Is right there. We did a prayer ceremony just the other day there. Yeah.
That's what we drink.
Now, let me tell you what I heard from a female friend who may have voted for the first time in her life. And she voted a way I would not have voted. But she told me the other day when I mentioned Standing Rock to her that, she said there are already 18 pipelines under that land. And I said, so one more won't make a difference? But tell me, are there 18 pipelines under that ground?
There's so many pipelines. The pipelines are spread out. There's not any that's currently going through the Standing Rock Reservation.
Okay, well,
they're putting into construction so many more pipelines. It's terrifying. The map, there's a map that you can look up where it has all the proposed pipelines, and it makes America look like an insane subway system.
Another thing that just came to my consciousness, that there may have been a long-standing, going back to Native American, I don't know what you call them, stories about the black snake.
Yeah, the prophecy of the black
prophecy,
snake.
Thank
yeah,
you.
There's a prophecy that I believe it's Lakota. I'm very sorry. I mean, no disrespect if that's incorrect. That speaks of a time when the black snake will run through the land. And so the thing is, the only way to kill the black snake is to chop the head off. And the people that are going to come together are called the Rainbow People, which is the seventh generation. And there will be people from every tribe, from every area, every color, every creed, to come together to fight this black snake. So
this has come to pass.
It has come to pass. The Ocheti Shakowin camp is the sacred fires camp that has been set up for the first time in, I think, almost 150 years. And there were more nations gathered together in that area at one time than ever before has happened in the history of the world.
You know, I'm also have noticed as observing as the protest developed, I guess it's over now.
No, it's definitely not over.
But
it's certainly not over. Please don't ever say that. It is just the beginning. Camp is always meant to be a temporary state. We don't make camp to stay forever. We make camp to make a statement and move on.
But they're not able to block anymore.
Well, it's still going through. There's several lawsuits that have been filed by the Cheyenne River and the Standing Rock tribes against the pipeline. There are camps that have been set up for about a month and a half now, all along down the trail where the Keystone's supposed to go. There's camps in Sabal Trail, Florida. There's camps in Iowa. There's people here working tirelessly all the time in Kansas City, in Columbia, in St. Louis. I just spoke in Columbia at the Water and Land Protectors event. And the fight is most certainly here to stay, and will be here to stay, I believe, until either we die from not having any drinking water, or we finally realize as a people and as a community that we're not going to be able to live this way. And we are not going to be able to bring children into the world and be able to promise them that they will have all the resources that were given to us by the earth to live. And as a community, as a people, we have to make that choice.
And so it seems rather short-sighted of the oil industry to not recognize that they have families who need water. They themselves need water. How can these people, I just cannot comprehend how these people cannot recognize or be so vested.
I didn't know I drank from the Missouri River until about 3 years ago.
It is right there.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, the water comes out of your faucet at home. Just a lot of people
just think
are not They don't ask where, you know, the water comes from. They don't ask where eggs or milk. They don't ask where any of it comes from. And I was guilty of it. I mean, it was, I had no idea what got things to my house until I meant to go looking for it. And a lot of people don't.
Right. We are privileged people, and I think that it's incredibly important for us, every one of us, to recognize that privilege, because when the water runs out, we're not going to have any more privileges. And it's very close to us. We, you know, like you said, we do drink from this Missouri River. I have drank from the mouth of this river. I have seen it, you know, and I've been there, and it is so important for us to stand with it in any way that we can and contribute to the movement in any way that we can, because unfortunately it's going to be an ongoing thing with everyone.
Well, I really like the idea that you said we need to recognize our privilege here, and I think this is an example of really showing you what it means to recognize privilege and why it's important to recognize privilege, and that especially in this point, if you don't recognize your own privilege, you're actually hurting yourself, because you don't realize that it is a privilege to have running water in your house.
Absolutely.
It's just normal. But to discover that that is, in fact, a privilege, and that is, in fact, something that can be taken away from you, that it can, there's other people that don't have it, it is a very important privilege to recognize, because it is not a given, and it is not something that everyone experiences.
Yeah, and I also want to point out, you know, a lot of people say, like, well, how can these people be working for this pipeline, and how can they do this? And I understand that they have families that they need to feed, and that they have immediate problems like paying rent and putting clothes on their children's backs and putting the gas in their car and getting to work. And unfortunately, that sometimes the immediate survival takes precedent over the big meta picture of, you know, water is going to run out. So I sympathize with them. I empathize with them. You know, they are every hardworking person that's just trying to get by. Unfortunately, this is the opportunity that they've been given, but it's been handed down to them from this all-powerful corporation. And unfortunately, that's just going to end up in, I think, about 36 jobs in the long run. But for now, it keeps them fed and a roof over their heads. And so I understand why people can say, like, well, you know, there's jobs, yes. And I also understand that they can't exactly see the big picture right now.
Well, especially if you haven't taken that journey of curiosity, of finding out what it is that allows you to live in the comfort that you do. If you don't recognize that this little stream that becomes a little bit of a river, that becomes a bigger river, if you don't realize that that is where you get your life sustenance from, I don't think you would fight so hard to protect it. If you didn't know that so much of your life depended on that water, I don't know that I would be fighting for something that I didn't realize was that important.
Well, and we don't think about it until things like Flint, Michigan happen. You know, we don't think about those things because to us, like you said, it just comes out of the faucet. And now we're starting to see, you know, little snippets of what life could possibly be like in Flint, Michigan. And we're going to start seeing more and more of it because, unfortunately, with these pipelines, there's a 100% chance that they're going to break at some point. And they are going to flood the natural water sources at some point. I mean, we just had a pipeline explosion like a month and a half ago here in Kansas City over on the east side. And they continually happen on and on and on, and we're not getting the point that, especially with such a big project like the DAPL, it's been done in a slapshod manner with, I'm sure, extremely hurried work, with subpar foreign materials. And then we're expecting that to stay together and somehow pump all of this oil that we're not even going to use here in this country.
Well, we do need to take a brief station break, and we will be back continuing this conversation. And you might want to call in and participate in the conversation. It's 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534, and we will be back after this underwriting message.
Sunday evenings at Californo's in Westport features live music by Kansas City jazz staple Rich Hill on piano from 6 to 9 p.m. Supporting KKFI, Californo's restaurant offers a full bistro menu including wine and grilled steaks with fireside seating. Rich Hill, every Sunday evening at Californo's in Westport. You can discover our menu and browse private event spaces online at californos.com.
Well, they had to call the doctor, and the doctor had to strap you down.
They say when you go, there'll be a bright light, the reflection of the sun off the street of gold. Angels and music that soothes your wandering soul, filling you with joy. Unless you go the other way, that cold, dark place filled with scorching heat, aching screams, agonizing pain. But one thing for sure, maybe, just maybe, the world may publish your poem.
The Prison Poets of Leavenworth, Kansas on Jaws of Justice Radio, 9 a.m. Monday morning.
We're back with Monique Gabrielle Salazar, an activist, clothing store owner, and, movie star. Coming out in a HBO documentary about women and abortion, and promoter of safe sex, and activist from Standing Rock. And we're talking about Standing Rock and what does this mean to the survival of humanity, basically. What's going to happen?
And if you're listening and you've also had an experience with Standing Rock, I particularly encourage you to call in 816-931-5534. We all need to bear witness to what is happening and what is going to continue to happen.
Absolutely. This is the time that we need to stand up and make sure that everyone is knowledgeable about the atrocities that are going on in North Dakota.
It's just mind-boggling to me that we as Americans hold ourselves out to be the number one supreme power, and supposedly that we do all things good. I mean, I would think that most people think, oh, America is a good place, good. But yet our government does such underhanded, I don't know. And they're in collusion with the corporations, with the oil industry, in doing this.
Well, President Trump owns part of the Dakota Access Pipeline, and the energy partners headed by Kelsey Warren contributed handily to his campaign.
Well, who would have thought that?
I never would have known.
I'm shocked. I'm absolutely shocked.
I have been shocked since I heard the news and have not fully recovered and may never.
Yeah.
It's a tragedy.
You know, I realize we never did go over the chemicals that have been found.
Ah, yes.
Chemical warfare against American citizens.
Yes, chemical warfare against American citizens. And this is from information from a woman who testified at the unofficial UN hearing with the head of the small groups between indigenous people and businesses, which I was privileged enough to attend at the casino the last time that I was at camp. So she gave testimony due to a hair sample that she had tested. There were three different chemicals that they found just in her hair. The first one is phosphine, and it's also known as phosphorated hydrogen or hydrogen phosphide. And phosphine can result from the contact between metallic phosphides and moisture. It's a fumigant, a catalyst, a semiconductor industry, pickling of metals, chemical synthesis. Those are all occupational exposures. The description is a colorless gas with an odor like that of garlic. If inhaled, it acts as an irritant and can cause liver and kidney damage, as well as pulmonary and cerebral edema. Edema? How do you say that?
Edema.
Thank you. Coughing, chest tightness, pulmonary edema, abdominal pain, thirstiness, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, anorexia, jaundice, weakness, fatigue, vertigo, headache, ataxia, paresthesias, and convulsions. Second one is castor pumice, which is a residue from the dehydration and oil extraction of castor beans. And it's a white powder that if it is inhaled or ingested, it's an irritant. Contains ricin and is also believed to contain chlorogenic acid. It causes coughing, which what we at camp, we call it the dapple cough, and pretty much everyone that's at camp has it. It's a cough that lasts from 6 to 12 weeks, is not responsive to medication, and can leave and come back again. So there can be coughing, sneezing, runny nose, chest tightness, wheezing, hay fever, as well as a plethora of abdominal problems. The third one is trichloropropane, and it is a degreaser and a paint and varnish remover, and it's a clear liquid with an unpleasant odor, and if it's inhaled, it can be an irritant and a central nervous system depressant, and it manifests in headache, irritation to the nose, eyes, and throat. So those are the three that they actually did find in that sample of her hair. The other one that we talked about was Rosol, and that was the one that's been killing all the animals, and uranium, which has been seeping through the ground.
Ricin.
Ricin. And like I said, I find it ironic that they call us the eco-terrorists.
So how have they been delivering chemicals like this? Do you have an idea? I mean, is this something that they were able to witness happening, or
they had the first time that I went there, they had a crop duster that circled camp 24 hours a day. I mean, just 24 hours a day. The last time that I went, it's basically all white when you get there. The sky is white. The ground is white. It's hard to tell. You feel like you're in an egg almost. it's very isolating feeling. But it was no longer clear enough for them to continually circle camp, so they were instead relying on the missile launcher surveillance system and the snipers to see what we were doing at camp. But what they did was they would dive bomb camp. So they would fly above the clouds until they got to camp, and then they would dive bomb camp, release chemicals, and then fly back. And they did this usually after there was some sort of direct action or prayer ceremony that had happened.
Prayers are scary.
They are terrifying.
I'm feeling sick to my stomach. I'm so sorry. I'm just sitting here and I'm just feeling sick about this.
Yeah, I had a professor last semester that was going back and forth to Standing Rock. So I'm not shocked by this. I mean, it's kind of, you know, some people, once you've already been shocked by it, you're like, yeah. And it's disturbing, though, because that means in some way you're acclimated to this.
Absolutely, yeah. The problem is that we're not shocked enough about this.
Well, like Flint.
Exactly.
We're completely acclimated to Flint, and we've basically accepted that, well, you know, replacing all those pipes would be really hard. So why don't you just buy bottled water?
And
basically, that's at the point.
They can't even bathe with the water, can they, in Flint?
No, you cannot bathe with that water.
They just raise the acceptable amounts of certain contaminants, the water's fine.
Also,
Just tell them the normal level is higher.
Yeah.
President Obama disappointed me greatly when he released the video of him drinking water from Flint that had been filtered, and he took the tiniest catsip. I mean, he barely wet his tongue with it, and was like, "Oh, I have drunk it. See," and put it back down. And in my mind, if you're going to sit there and endorse water that has been filtered from Flint, you are going to drink the entire glass, and then you are going to make your wife also drink a glass,
and your children
will both drink a glass as well. We are not going to barely wet our lips with a small taste of this filtered water and proclaim it safe, or something that you would ingest yourself.
Well, and this is the amazing thing. You know, we can build this pipe through the Dakota region, but updating the plumbing system for a city.
Out of the question.
And
totally.
Now it's coming up. You know, when I learned high school chemistry class, I took AP chemistry in high school, and we learned about lead. And the periodic symbol for lead is PB, because the Latin is plumbum and we learned all of this stuff. And like, that's funny. And they were like, yeah, where do you think the word plumbing comes from? And we were like, what? They made plumbing out of lead? And they said, yeah, in ancient Rome.
Yeah, and they all suffered severe lead poisoning from it. Absolutely.
And now, after the Flint thing, it turns out we built all of our plumbing out of lead, too. And possibly the plumbing that we're using right now is all lead. And we don't even... It was laid so long ago, they don't even know what they use. They have no idea. They have no idea what shape it's in. It is mind-boggling.
Is there anyone out there who would like to call in? The telephone number is 816-931-5534, and we may have a caller at this very moment. I am trying to absorb all this because I'm pretty old. I'll probably survive until I die without all of this stuff hitting me, but I don't know about the rest of you peeps around here if you're going to make it or not, because and I can't believe what the U.S. government gets away with.
The people of Standing Rock are being poisoned by corporate and government entities, and that's the bottom line.
And I do believe called fascism, I think. But go right ahead.
I do believe we've got a caller on the line. Caller, could you state your name and where you're calling from?
Yes, my name is Tony. I'm calling from the North Side.
Hi, Tony.
In defense of the president, just because the water might be safe doesn't necessarily mean that it tastes good. There could be a thousand reasons why you didn't continue to drink the water or encourage other people to drink it. Water, in general, is nasty. Even the water that you get in most bottles, there's so much chemicals and other stuff that's in the water, which the EPA overlooks. If we were to attack this issue, I would say address the EPA and their failure to respond, to be, you know, inept or not responsible, and to... look at the bigger issues. And lastly, in conclusion, President Obama is not the president anymore. He ran against a obstructionist Congress that their main priority was, you know, to block his every initiative. And so I don't necessarily fault him or his, you know, administration for anything that has to do with the Flint issue. The bottom line is there's bad water everywhere, and we really should be holding the EPA more accountable. In terms of Standing Rock, that is a tragic situation, and I think there definitely needs to be a public response and outcry with regards to the environmental issues and
Tony.
The just downright continued theft and rape of the Native American people.
Tony, you have got me picturing, and you have me picturing Congress preventing Obama from having a glass of water.
Well, also, the EPA all got fired.
He didn't drink the water. That doesn't necessarily mean that the water tastes good. There could be a thousand reasons why he, you know, just took a sip of it. I mean, obviously, he's not a chemist. He has no way of knowing whether or not the water is healthy either. So, I think our argument is not even so much President Obama. If we're going to make some arguments, I think we need to focus on the environmental protection agencies and other agencies like the EPA that's responsible for making sure the water is drinkable.
Tony, have you heard that the EPA is being gutted? It's a little late. Yeah, it's a little late to go to the EPA. It's all over.
The EPA was supposed to be in Standing Rock the day that Trump shut it down. So we have been asking the EPA for help for a very long time, which is why the environmental impact study was supposed to go through and why this was all supposed to be delayed for at least a year while that went on. And then come to find that our current president had completely fired everyone and shut it down. So,
well, and furthermore, you know, Obama was, we all miss him, I guess.
Yeah, we do miss him.
But he was not really as progressive as he campaigned on. He was he was a good, solid, moderate, middle of the road type of Democrat. That I mean, I don't think Republicans would have been so obstructionist against him if it weren't for some bizarre policy changes that they had within their policy. I mean, he was really a middle-of-the-road kind of president. And I don't think he really did enough to recognize that the people want clean water.
And I do, though, I can take Tony's comment that the other side obstructed him from the very get-go.
They did.
They said they were going to, and they did all the
but
way.
But he also didn't really try. I mean, when he had a full Democrat Congress.
He did that first 4 years, didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah. Well, two. First two, I think.
First two, yeah.
He, you know, we got the Affordable Care Act, which is really, really great if you're an insurance company.
And it was a Republican. It was written by the Republicans, so it, yeah. Well, okay.
We're not partisan here. Everybody tries to think that we've got a partisan show. We hate on politicians pretty equally.
I'm fairly sure that all of them need to vacate office.
Yeah, and if you want to call in, that's 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534. And I'm reminded several times, I just heard this saying by, I think it was recredited to Mark Twain, that it's easier to fool the people than it is to convince the people they've been fooled. And so many people, well, it is hard to admit you've made a mistake, you had an error judgment, you thought something, and then you found out you were wrong. It's probably very difficult.
The only bigger liars than a quack are the quack's patients, is a favorite saying of mine. Yeah, people don't like to admit that they've been fooled, and they don't like to admit that they're wrong. And it is hard for everyone to do that, but it's a necessary growth in just being a human and becoming a bigger part of your community, that we need to face that and kind of get over ourselves a little bit sometimes.
And we do have another caller on the phone. Caller, could you state your name and where you're calling from?
Yes, my name's Will.
Hi, Will.
I'm calling from Kansas City.
Hi, Will.
Actually, Waldo area.
Well, go ahead with your comment.
I'm a 66-year-old retired African-American male. I'm practicing now for the second time in my life music full-time. Kansas City is a lovely city for doing such a thing. As long as the Social Security check keeps showing up. My comment is, though, is that the hostess, and that's what got to me. I don't know. Am I speaking with the hostess? I'm on the air, maybe.
There's two of us here.
Anyway, it seems to me you seem to be incredibly naive as to the horrific history that this country has exposed on the world. Dr. King, in his, I think his last famous speech of April 4th, 1967, said, "My country is the greatest purveyor of violence in the world." And you seem to be incredibly, I'm sorry, naive as to the thing that's happening at Standing Rock.
No, we aren't. We're just probably perhaps not ironic enough. We get it.
Well, yeah. I don't know. It seems that coming across the air like you're just seems to be so awed by what's going on there. And I mean, as the history of the African American in this country, I mean, I'm sure you maybe or maybe not familiar with what they call Tuskegee 626.
Yes, familiar with
that. Okay.
Yeah.
And KKFI has always been my go-to radio station here. You guys are doing a phenomenal job. Have been doing for years. But it just I just happen to be
the shocking
you guys
thing
I was
is
preparing lunch.
What year is this?
We thought this was history is the problem.
Yeah, we did think it was history.
We did not think this was going to continue to happen.
I'm sorry, what was that?
I'm saying that I'm also the guest and not the host, but we thought that this was history. You know, we thought that we had perhaps progressed, and I believe that their shock is more in tune with that it's still happening, and it's not just happening to, you know, in Standing Rock, but it's happening, you know, in New York. They just sprayed the Puerto Rican neighborhood for Zika.
Yeah, they've been doing it for years.
They've been doing it forever.
I've seen credible evidence that they sprayed things through the New York subways when they were testing AIDS viruses and
with
all kinds
of stuff.
And
everything, absolutely.
I want to play the race card. A typical African-American, we're not surprised at none of this. And the whole thing about Trump being elected, there's a thread of just violence that just has been sewn into the flag of this place.
You're absolutely right.
And we need to. I don't know. I didn't vote for Bill Clinton. I mean, I don't know. I consider myself a social liberal and a fiscal conservative, but there definitely needs to be a third party involved here, because even Time Magazine called Congress Gucci Gulch. Both sides of the aisles wear Italian suits and Italian-made shoes.
And now, did you mean you didn't vote for Hillary?
99% of that pipeline has already been committed. I mean, constructed and ready to go. What? It's just a portion of it, I guess, that's going to be extending now either over or under the Missouri
River.
It's
already been built now.
And so, I don't know. It just seemed like this is a done deal. And we and I guess we keep looking surprised at the EPA chairperson now, was the guy who sued the EPA 9, 10, 12 times. I'm not surprised at any of this. This is the real America.
Well,
this is America I've lived in for 66 years. I've been on the ground myself twice.
Well, thank you for the call. I think you've brought up some really good points, and I'm sorry we've actually got another caller on the line. But we do have different experiences in this, and I think we do also have been acclimated to a lot of the things. We've been acclimated to them. We've also had them kind of swept under the rug for us through our education system, and white people do experience it differently.
Yes,
that white people experience America differently. And yes, sometimes I find myself shocked in ways that my friends of color are not.
Oh, it's colonization. It's a 500-year reign of terror.
And I do believe we've got another caller on the line. Caller, could you state your name and where you're calling from?
Yeah, my name's John. I'm also from the Waldo area.
Hi, John.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I don't know whether you guys knew or not, but Mr. Ellison lost the election for head of DNC.
Who won?
Perez.
Tom Perez?
The DNC, the Republican Party, hasn't learned anything. They're just going to keep going down the path of, you know, corporatism and Wall Street, you know, financing them.
Well, that's where all the money is.
You know? The whole electoral system is based on money. It's
yes.
So they're playing that game. And I guess until we, change that system and overturn, like, Citizens United, you know, which makes it all legal, we're in big trouble.
Well, do you have any experience with the Standing Rock issue, or?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, how can we stop the corporations who want to, you know, burn all the fossil fuel there is in the ground and, you know, to make their profits? If they they've effectively purchased the government.
Exactly.
Mm, yeah.
So,
our government has been for sale. That's for sure. You know, I kind of, you know, burning all the fossil fuels, I'm reminded there was a Drew Carey routine back in the 90s where he was talking about, oh, everybody's all concerned about global warming, but I live in, you know, Cleveland, and it gets in the wintertime, and he said he would just go outside with a can of hairspray and spray it, and say, I'm cold now. What about?
Well, it's not funny anymore.
But I think that's how people feel.
It's getting real serious.
When I run into people last week, of 70-degree weather for, what, 3 days in February?
The forsythia are blooming already in the...
What a beautiful day.
Willow trees are leafing out, I noticed the privet are leafing out.
Every time somebody told me it was a beautiful day, I was like, it's February. It is February. This is supposed to be the most miserably cold month of the year. It is 70 degrees. I'm in a t-shirt. This is February. This is messed up. I don't care if I feel comfortable. I'm not comfortable with this.
Yeah, absolutely. I ask people when they say that, I said, well, how, if it can get to 75 in February, how hot do you think it can get in July and August? And they just sort of run.
We'll all be Kansas City barbecue at that point.
They don't want to think about it. I was a boy in 1951, and it was 120 degrees in Lenexa, Kansas. You know, and there was no global warming.
That's a desert. 120 degrees is the desert.
Yeah, and I painted a house in 1980, probably 79 or 80 here in Kansas City, and many days I was out there, it was 115, you know, back in the 80s.
Well, we don't want that.
Well, we're going to get it, I'm afraid.
Well, thanks for calling in. Yeah. We're coming up here towards the end of the hour, and keep listening. Thanks for your call. Do we have anything that people can go to get some more information on this? Do you have some recommendations for people on how to maybe become more active, on how to keep an eye on it? How do we protect our water? What can each of us do that you know of to stand in solidarity and protect our water?
Well, there's a lot of things you can do. I always say that activism is a pyramid, because there may be the few that can actually go to Standing Rock, but it takes a community to send those people. So if you hear of benefits of events, if you know someone who is a water protector that has a business or has a band or has anything artistic going on, go and support those people. Another way that you can do that is to go to facebook.com and to follow the Sacred Stone Camp site. They post everything.
That's what I was following.
Absolutely. Sacred Stone Camp site is a good one. Another one is run by my friends that are still in Standing Rock. It's the Ocheti Shakowing Camp. Facebook, I don't know if they're planning on dismantling that or not, but for now it's still there. Another good one is Standing Rock Rising, who is an Atlanta-based photographer, Ryan Visions, who has been up there for months and has taken the most gorgeous photographs that I've possibly ever seen in my life. They're absolutely stunning. And then also from my Facebook for the poetry book that I wrote, I also put a lot of live videos and stuff that I find interesting or particularly relevant, which is facebook.com/standingupbook. So
Standing Up Book.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So we can, there's lots of ways to stay connected. And it's so great, like I said, with the social media now that we can get involved in that way. I know that the Sacred Stone Camp has a fundraising link where you can just donate to them directly. Which is great for them, because then they can use that to buy the supplies that they need, because we never know when the police are going to put up blockades like they recently did and not allow firewood or camping equipment through. So,
great. Thank you, Monique. Gabrielle Salazar, activist extraordinaire, and I might mention your heritage, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, I'm what you call... or what we call New Mexican. We're from New Mexico, so people have been settled there for thousands of years. And so I'm basically a mix of all Native and European conquerors. So it's been a struggle having these warring sides inside of myself.
I like the name New Mexican. That's...
Yeah, so it's a good melting pot of quite a lot of people that have been there for 500 years and beyond that from the Native side.
And this show will be podcast eventually, and I believe Eco Radio, you were a guest Monday night. Was it Monday night?
Yeah, with Mike Murphy, absolutely. Yeah. That was wonderful.
So
yeah.
They can go to that podcast, which if it isn't up, will be up shortly, and hear more about your travels and Standing Rock and what you're doing. And I'm still, I can't help what the man said. I still think it's 2017, and we're still having to deal with these injustices, inequities, and it's getting worse.
Absolutely.
It's getting worse.
Yeah, and it will continue to.
Our guest next week is going to be Jane McLean, who is the founder of the Women's Wall of Achievement, and she's going to bring a couple of women with her. She threw out some names, but I won't mention them. They had an event last night based off of the Women's Equality Coalition, had 120 people there, broke out into 17 speaking groups, and so a lot going on in the women's movement. And looking forward to your HBO documentary. When is that airing?
That'll be on April 3rd. It'll be on HBO.
Okay, great. Yeah. April 3rd.
Thank you.
And we're out of here. We are awaiting the arrival of Donna Wolf.
And well, Ebony is going to do Urban Connections for Donna Wolf
today. Oh, is she? Oh, okay. I was not aware.
But stay tuned for Urban Connections. And then guess who's coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson. And tune back in next Saturday for Every Woman Again.